The U.S. can expect less Chinese money in this new year. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. With U.S. interest rates on the rise, foreign investors are increasingly trying to get a piece of those higher returns. This is especially true in China, where there's been quite a buying spree in U.S. assets in recent months. But starting soon, Chinese investors who want to buy significant amounts of foreign currency will run into some new obstacles. To get some context on this, let's turn to Sean Rhine, who is Managing Director of the China Market Research Group in Shanghai.
Starting tomorrow, it's going to become even more difficult. There's a lot of paperwork they have to fill out, such as where they're going to be using the money, why they're going to be using the money, and when. And the reason, David, is because the Chinese renminbi depreciated about 8% last year to the U.S. dollar. And so there's a lot of capital flowing out of the country to the United States. And the government is worried about a continued depreciation and causing a panic in the value of the Chinese renminbi.
I see that about $45 billion worth of U.S. assets was purchased by Chinese investors in the year just ended. You think that's going to be a lower number in 2017?
It's going to be a much lower number in the first quarter. You saw that actually in the first half of 2016, outbound M&A went up 60%. By the end of the year, it had dropped to about 50%. Because the government made it so much more difficult for companies to make acquisitions abroad and actually convert the currency. They're also making it very difficult for individual Chinese tourists. And that's one of the reasons why you see the value of Bitcoin crossed $1,000 yesterday, because so many Chinese are sort of evading capital controls by buying Bitcoin. There are also some billionaires that are buying aluminum. They're stockpiling it in China, and they're actually shipping it to Mexico, to the United States, and other countries as a way to get money out of the country.
Oh, that's fascinating. Sean Rhine is Managing Director of the China Market Research Group. Thank you very much.
Happy New Year.
Tax filing season in the U.S. begins later this month, and this year, low-income filers who qualify for two popular tax credits may have to wait longer than usual for the money. Dan Crocker from Minnesota Public Radio reports.
Every year, the earned income tax credit funnels about $60 billion to working low-income tax filers. The average refund is just over $3,000. But in an effort to reduce errors and fraud, starting this year, the IRS is required to hold those refunds until February 15th. That's about 2 weeks later than past years. Elaine Mogg with the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center says while that sounds early,
for low-income families who are perhaps receiving the most significant payment they're going to in the entire year, February 15th is pretty late.
Mogg says many families rely on early refunds to catch up on bills. Child tax credit refunds will also be delayed. Julia Cheng manages a tax site program in Duluth, Minnesota that helps low-income people file their returns.
The message from the IRS is that taxpayers should file as they usually do.
The IRS says it will process returns when it receives them. It just can't send out checks until mid-February. In Duluth, Minnesota, I'm Dan Crocker for Marketplace.
Our winter tomatoes used to come mostly from Mexico and California. These days, many a tomato is grown in Canada in crazy greenhouses that stretch for miles along Ontario's Lake Erie. That industry continues to grow, even with new restrictions on how much fertilizer pollution can be dumped into the lake. Karen Schaefer has the story.
So let's start in here.
Peter Quiring is showing me around his little family business in Leamington, Ontario. He's CEO of Nature Fresh. At 175 acres, it's one of the biggest hydroponic greenhouses in Canada. As we walk, boxes of bright red beefsteak tomatoes roll past on their way to the packers.
You know, snacking tomatoes will be available in stores within the next couple of weeks.
Quiring is one of just many Canadian growers here in southern Ontario near Lake Erie. All told, there's almost 3,000 acres of tomatoes, peppers, and cucumbers under glass. And they generate nearly $1 billion in sales each year. But that much produce needs a lot of water and fertilizer. Lee Orphan is regional director of the Ontario Ministry of the Environment. He says all that fertilizer was causing a problem.
What we found was the hydroponic solution, which has the nutrients, was going to the stormwater pond, and then when the rain event occurred, it would overflow into the creek.
When that creek flows into Lake Erie, it carries with it concentrated greenhouse nutrients. That can feed toxic algae blooms, like the one that caused a drinking water crisis in Toledo, Ohio in 2014. The ministry asked growers to fix the problem or face penalties.
And it could include fines of $25,000 a day for a corporation.
So growers started figuring out how to stop polluting the lake. Some paid for municipal wastewater treatment. Others, like Peter Quiring, improved water recycling within the greenhouse.
We did a lot of work with better means of recycling, being able to use more of the water and the nutrient.
Quiring says the initial cost was hundreds of thousands of dollars, but now ongoing costs for water treatment aren't a big part of his budget. In fact, he's building an even bigger greenhouse across the U.S. border in Ohio. In Leamington, Canada, I'm Karen Schaefer from Marketplace.
And here are some numbers about the risks and costs of new medicines. There's word that just 22 novel drugs were approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in 2016, compared to more than double that number the year before. Deloitte calculates that the big drug companies got a return on research and development investment of less than 4% last year, which is low. Some of the new drugs will cost a fortune, and one drug industry consultancy is warning that those prices will be met with pushback, possibly including critical tweets from soon-to-be President Trump. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.